There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
We'll put out an all-points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Shut back down and shut your trap. It's time for...
Jones. Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Hello? This thing on?
No, it's not on. Actually, yes, it is. This is the Dutch Jones radio program for the Friday I didn't know was coming. I was in a state of confusion yesterday and thought yesterday was Friday, so this is an extra special Friday for you folks. Thank you for tuning in to the Dutch Jones radio program. We're beaming to you via satellite to the internet over outlets unknown, too numerous to number, from the fine little commonwealth of Cahuilla, California. And I am Dutch Jones, bringing you the Christian militant worldview. The opinions and input and perspective that 90% of the Christians in America are going, huh? You can't say that. And 100% of the enemies of Christ are saying, we can't let him say that. That can't be true. Oh, no. I'm like holy water to a vampire, I guess. And unfortunately, it splashes on some of our so-called brothers and sisters of the faith, and they still act like they're vampires. They don't like what they're getting here. Well, that's good. As long as I'm getting complaints from a few mealy-mouthed so-called Christians, I feel like I'm doing the right thing. So thank you for tuning in, taking the chance, whether you're listening on Facebook, whether you're a pod person listening on the podcast that our friend Olima has set up. You're listening on DutchJones.info, DutchJones.info. You're here on UBroadcast. You're hearing us on Channel 2 on the CB there in somewhere in the unknown parts of New York. You're on the Baby Monitor broadcast network that I've been told is going on in New York City. Whether you're picking us up on FM in Philadelphia, Southern Florida, all those places. Just keep letting me know where you're doing it. And if you don't want me to announce it, I understand, but let me know, because we want to share where people can hear this. I want people to be able to hear this on their kitchen radio. I want people to be able to hear this in their car. I don't want people, you know, it's nice, especially on the East Coast because it's later in the day, but here people are driving in their cars right now in California. They're getting off the work, leaving the, you know, slaving for the man, and they're trying to get home, so they missed the first hour of this stuff. And so it'd be nice if we get some pirate radio stations set up all over California, and we'll help you with that any way we can. Navy Davies here. I'm glad to see you here. I was going to be talking about you in a little bit about a prayer request that you sent in, so I didn't think you'd make it. So, welcome. We got Olima, Graham 242, Scotty 38, and Warlin among the Dutch Jones fans that are in there, and a couple guests. Welcome, guests. If this is your first time listening and you're getting us through Facebook especially, that's where we get most of our first-time listeners, we noticed. Make sure you check out DutchJones.info. There's a whole bunch of stuff there for you. DutchJones. .info. And Lou's got a forum over there that you can connect to. There's a link to the church at Cahuilla. There's army and military manuals of all kinds that you need to have. You need to download them and print up the parts that are good. Store the others later. Times are coming, folks. Our supreme commander has left the country with his own armada. Now, in days of old, that usually meant he was going to go to another country and go into exile. Let's hope so. But Obongo spending, what was it, billions and billions of dollars?
$200 million a day
for his own security detachment.
Navy
armada, aircraft, his whole family, and he's left the country. Where was he going, honey? Do you know where he was going?
I think it was
Spain.
India.
He's going to India. That's right. He's going to go kiss up to the Indians and the Pakis.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks. That's not a hat. That's my hair. Those of you looking at the picture, Stacy this morning, she got my Head and Shoulders bottle and put a bunch of Rogaine in it. And that's what the end result was. I look like a chia pet now. That's the Greg Brady hairstyle. I'm very sensitive to medications. Like when I go in for surgery, they give me like a third of what I need to be knocked out. And so it's just the way it is. And Lou's working on some stuff there. He's got some. I can't see what he's doing, so when he changes it, let me know. So I know it's it looks like a brown rug. Like it looks like somebody took a poodle and slapped it on my head. But it's really, I'm liking it. Oh, he's got some surprises for you. He's worked out some really good stuff. So it's good there. So yeah, somebody's saying, let's hope he stays in India. Yeah, I mean, if Al-Qaeda's real, now's your chance, guys. Actually, we know that's not true, and nothing's going to happen to him. He's probably going over there to deliver more weapon systems to the enemy. Well, before we get into the series, before I do that, Navy Davy had an incident in his family, a father-in-law who had a massive stroke yesterday. His name was, what did I say? I forgot to write it down already. Huh? Edward. And God knows who it is. So we just need your prayer request for Edward. He knows the Lord. Things are pretty grim. So let's just, send our prayers that way. I was real glad when I found out that he was saved because I think he's in a comatose state now. Okay, we're buffering. Lou's probably messing with something. Take down the flag. Take down anything that keeps us using up too much bandwidth, Lou. They said we're buffering. I don't want to get canceled here. The reason we got the camera up today is that we're going to... But that prayer request is there. It's a sincere prayer request. Don't you guys forget that that's another outlet of this. We are by all means first a ministry. So if you have a prayer request, feel free to call and let us know. And how do you call us? Area code 559-561-8225. Quick, get your crayon ready. 559-561-8225. And make sure that, call us up. Give us a prayer request. Email it to us at dutch@dutchjones.info. dutch@dutchjones.info. Any technical questions, complaints about the website, or just poking fun at them, you can do lew@dutchjones.info. If you want to talk about the forum, getting your own email, say you made a donation and you haven't got your bumper stickers yet, you can give us a call, give us a email, let us know. We're not on this phone other than the show, but we'll be in here editing and stuff, so you give it a try. You know, don't call it like 2 in the morning because there's people that sleep in this building sometimes, and it's kind of our, I don't want to use the word transitional housing facility. We have a little apartment in here. As you guys know, if you've been listening for a while, I used to be there with my family. Now we're in the converted milk barn. So we're doing that. Well, yesterday I talked about Bill. Give me the name, Lou. Help my head. Who did we talk about yesterday?
William Cooper
being assassinated, murdered yesterday by the New World Order.
I thought it was the name of a bill.
Yeah. Bill Cooper. We talked about that yesterday because I thought yesterday was Friday. That's just the way it is. Well, today there was another person, not quite so active in politics, but he had an input on me. As a young kid, it was one of the first artists that I listened to when I was like 6 or 7 years old. I had some records, his greatest hits, who also died on this day. And we're going to talk a little bit about him. This is a little lighter day. Later we're going to get into show and tell, and I'm going to talk to you about making ghillie suits and kind of things to look for when you're out there to put together a good ghillie suit. But we're going to talk, of course, about Johnny Horton. Now, first, my personal reflections of Johnny Horton. When I was 5 or 6, I had a little phonograph player. I had his greatest hits album. I don't know whose it was in the house. But I listened to this thing and marched around the house listening to this. The Battle of New Orleans, Johnny Reb, Alaska, all the songs that Johnny Horton put out there. And I was just, I loved it. It kind of was the beat to the tempo that I marched to as a young kid and had a huge influence on me. I don't know anything about his politics. He was probably just a great American patriot that wrote good songs. We don't have a lot of people doing that today that are, you know, mainstream like he was. He had won a singing contest, and the reward was he got a recording record. But on this day he died. In a car crash. It's funny because they also said, and when I was doing the research, I heard on the news this morning, they said that Sergeant Barry Sadler died on this same day years later, and that's not true. So I got that from CBS News this morning, and it's wrong. Barry Sadler died in
September,
several years later of old age. But Johnny Horton was born John Gale Horton on April 30th, 1925. And he died on November 5th, 1960. So 1960, so that's, wow, that's 6 years older than me. So he'd only be 6 years older than me. He'd still be a young man. He'd still be producing great music. And it's a shame that we lost him, especially the way in which we lost him. Now, he's an American country music singer who was most famous for his semi-folk so-called saga songs, which launched the historical ballad craze of the late 1950s and early 1960s. And that's the kind of music I'm saying we're missing today. Now, I love Poker Face and a few of the other patriotic bands that are out there that are doing, but heavy metal, that kind of thing. I miss the big epic that tell a story, even if the history's a little twisted, you know. The song Comanche, that kind of stuff. But it's still good. With them, he had several major crossover hits, most notably in 1959, the Battle of New Orleans, which won the 1960 Grammy Award for Best Country and Western Recording. The song won the Grammy Hall of Fame Award, and in 2001 ranked number 333 on the IRAA's Songs of the Century. In 1960, Horton had two other crossover hits, North to Alaska. It was the soundtrack to a John Wayne film, if you remember that, North to Alaska. And my favorite of all time, every one of his songs, I would play it until the needle wore out on my little record player and I'd have to beg my mom to get another one, Sink the Bismarck. Horton was also a rockabilly singer and was inducted into the Rockabilly Hall of Fame. And that's where my main vein of music taste is. I love rockabilly. Rockabilly and historical folk stuff. You want to send me some albums for Christmas, send me rockabilly and punkabilly. I like punkabilly. Now, Horton was born in Los Angeles. He wasn't a Southern boy, to John and Claudia Horton, the youngest of five siblings, but raised in the town of Rust in East Texas. See, some of us boys, I was born in Boston, and then I got to the country later. His family trekked back and forth from California often as migrant fruit pickers, but always returned to the Rust Gallatin area of Texas. After graduation from high school in 1944, he attended the Methodist-affiliated Lon Morris College, then called Lon Morris Junior College in Jacksonville, Texas, on a basketball scholarship. Now, he later attended Seattle University and also briefly attended Baylor University, although he did not graduate from any college. Isn't it great, these guys that make it? Thereafter, he worked in California and Alaska. He returned to Texas and won a talent contest hosted by then-radio announcer Jim Reeves. Remember that name? Mm-hmm. At the Rio Palm Isle Club in Longview, Texas, the seat of Gregg County there in Texas, those of you listening there. And soon starred in the popular Louisiana Hayride in Shreveport. He remained a Hayride member until his death. I've seen a few of those old ones. We need to get some of those, Lou, the Louisiana Hayride. I would love to get those. They're like early hee-haw. After graduating in 1944, he went to Lon Morris Junior College in Jacksonville, Texas. Oh, I already read that. Johnny and elder brother Frank decided to study geology in Seattle in 1948, but both dropped out after a few weeks. Next stop was Florida, then back to California before Johnny took off to Alaska to look for gold. I love it. The songs he sang, he did it. You know, how many music stars today even write their own music? He did find it in a way, as it was here that he took up songwriting. Only for his own amusement at the stage. He joined Frank again in Seattle, headed south to Los Angeles, and then Frank married Johnny, took off again, seeing a familiar sign, Welcome to Texas. Now, he did a bunch of stuff on radio. He did all kinds of contests. Let's see here. Let's move down here and get this a little more obvious. I love this stuff. I love history. I love sharing with these people. Most people, they hear a Johnny Horton song, they don't dislike it. I've never met anybody that went, I hate Johnny Horton. But what really did it for him is Horton came to the attention of entrepreneur Fabor Robinson, whose first job as manager was to land him a spot on Cliffy Stone's Hometown Jubilee and KXLA-TV in Pasadena, which is still there today. During his early guest spots, he worked with the likes of Merle Travis and Tennessee Ernie Ford. The station then gave him a regular half-hour Saturday night spot billed as the Singing Fisherman, where he sang and showed off his casting skills with a fishing rod. Around this time, he also hosted Hacienda Party Time on KLAC-TV in Los Angeles. During 1950, he is rumored to have appeared in two movies with Gary Cooper, The Story of Will Rogers, and Distant Drums. I love old TV. That's why I do this radio. No limits. I mean, if I want to sit here and do casting, yeah, we'll do that. Now, a mixture of Horton's TV appearances and Robinson's contacts landed him a couple of singles on the small Cormac label. The first coupled plaid and calico was done with Dunrovin, and the second, Coal Smoke, Valve Oil and Steam, and Birds and Butterflies. Now, these are songs that I haven't heard, so I need to look those up. The label then folded, and Robinson acquired the masters and started his own Abbott Records. By mid-52, 10 Horton singles had been issued, but none hinted at cracking the country charts. They were, for the most part, plain, run-of-the-mill, Western-style songs lacking any sparkle, but provided a vital role in developing his vocal styling. You know, following a marriage to his wife, Donna, and a honeymoon in Palm Springs, he moved back east near to Louisiana, to the Louisiana Hayride, where he was now scheduled to appear on a regular basis. Another move was also completed when Robinson persuaded Mercury Records, A&R man Walter Kilpatrick, to land the fisherman. Things at the label started promisingly at first, with First Train Headed South, and it's also known as I Wished for an Angel, The Devil Sent Me. But despite good reviews in the trade papers and high-profile gigs, on the Hayride, nothing happened. Now, his first marriage to Donna Cook ended in a divorce, and then in September 53, he married Billie Jean Jones. Jones was the widow of country music star, get this, Hank Williams, to whom she had been married for the 2.5 months prior to his death. With Billie Jean, Johnny had two daughters, Yanina, sounds like your sister's name. What's your sister's name?
Yanette
and Yanina, and Melody. Billie Jean's daughter, Jerry, was also part of the family. Now, this guy, it's funny, he was all over the place back then, but you don't hear him played on commercial radio now. He did a lot of stuff, and you know, his first big hit was, let's see, I love this stuff. On the way to his first recording session, Horton and Frank stopped off in Memphis at Elvis's house, leaving with $10. Elvis loaned him $10, so they didn't have enough money to get to the studio. And the loan of Bill Black on slap bass, one of the Jordanaires. Tillman Franks had reservations about his own playing. This is one of his bandmates. So they go to this session. The first song tackled was mid-tempo rockabilly of I'm a One-Woman Man, penned by Horton and Frank. Suddenly, there was an urgency to the vocals, no doubt inspired by the fast picking of who he had picked up. Now, his music changed, and I'm trying to find here where it gets into his historical stuff. Boy, there's a lot here on him. Okay, now, his career picked up. He started making these ballads. He had the TV show. He had the radio shows. He was being spread around. Not your typical music tragedy, though. His life was not a tragedy. There's no use of drugs in here, no alcohol. Other than the divorce, this man did great. All was not well, though, as all this stuff kept going on, because Johnny kept having premonitions of his death. He started telling friends and family that he would soon die at the hands of a drunk. He asked his sister to pray for him and care for his wife, Billie Jean, and the girls, and he had his mother visit for a week. He canceled his scheduled attendance at the premiere of North to Alaska, the John Wayne film, and tried to back out of his next big gig, a club date at the Skyline in Austin, which was a big country and western bar at the time, you know, or theater, kind of like the Grand Ole Opry. Now, that was supposed to be on November 4th. Now, a big star, which he had now become, would never have been playing such a gig for such little reward. He was only going to be paid $800 to play this theater. But the common consensus is that he was broke again, and together with Frank's medical bills, because I skipped over that part, his brother was sick, from a recent hernia, he needed money. Now, Tommy Tomlinson flew in from Nashville, and let's skip over this stuff. I don't care about this stuff. For us. I should have... can't put a highlighter on this, so it's kind of hard. Okay. When they got to Skyline, Texas, Horton stayed in his dressing room, convinced that a drunk would kill him if he hung around the bar. He probably thought he was going to get shot or something. After the show, they started the 220-mile journey back to Shreveport. His buddy Tomlinson was in the back, observing that Horton was driving too fast. Frank was asleep in the front, and about 2 a.m. near Milano, Texas, they were crossing a bridge when a truck came at them, hitting both sides of the bridge before plunging into Horton's Cadillac. He had practiced avoiding head-on collisions, because he was paranoid about it, by driving into the sides of the road, but on the narrow bridge, he had no opportunity to do this. He was trapped. He was still breathing when he was pulled out of the Cadillac, but died on the way to the hospital. The 19-year-old truck driver of the pickup that hit him, James Davis, was drunk. Johnny Horton had died at the hands of a drunk after all, as he had feared. It is believed that a sun visor rod had pierced his skull. Frank suffered head injuries, and young Tomlinson had multiple leg fractures, and 9 months later had to have his left leg amputated. Ironically, Davis was virtually unscathed. Isn't that the way it always happens? The drunks are always unscathed. It's one of the Nazis and drunks. I have very little tolerance for drunks. Now, one of the band members' brother, Billy, was a pastor, and he held funeral services on November 8th, with Billie Jean becoming a widow for the second time at just age 28. Now, Johnny Cash read chapter 20 from the book of John, having flown in on a chartered plane, still trying to come to terms with his grief and guilt. Earlier on, Johnny Horton had reached out to Johnny Cash, but because of Johnny Cash's drug problem, their friendship was in turmoil. Columbia released various singles and greatest hits albums, and on October 5th, 1964, Johnny Cash and the Tennessee Three overdubbed a splendid Rock Island line, and "I Just Don't Like This Kind of Lovin'" to Horton's demos. Other such sessions were held throughout the 60s. I wish more people would do like a Johnny Horton tribute album. Now, an unfounded rumor that Horton was on his way to Dallas to meet actor Ward Bond on the night of the crash about a role on Wagon Train, that's not true. This morning on the radio, they reported he died in a plane crash, completely not true. And there's all kinds of stuff. Even though he did appear on Wagon Train as Robert Horton, it was his stage name that he used. So if you find Robert Horton, that's Johnny Horton. Now, he's buried in Hillcrest Cemetery in Houghton, east of Bossier City in northwestern Louisiana. Now, he'll forever be remembered for his major contribution to both country and rockabilly music. When Johnny Cash, a good friend of Horton's, learned about the accident, he said, "I locked myself in one of the hotel's bathrooms and cried." Cash also dedicated his rendition of "When It's Springtime in Alaska, It's 40 Below" to Horton on his album, Personal File. "Johnny Horton was a good old friend of mine." Of course, that's another great thing if you study Johnny Cash and how drugs ruined a lot of his relationships. Horton was inducted into the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame and posthumously inducted into the Delta Music Museum Hall of Fame in Faraday, Louisiana. Some racist songs are incorrectly associated with Horton. These songs are actually by Johnny Rebel. Now, ending on that, I want to let you know that a lot of people, because I play Johnny Horton, I get email, "I can't believe you're playing Johnny Horton. He was really a Klansman." Johnny Rebel is not Johnny Horton. Johnny Rebel's still alive. I've seen him perform. I can see videos of him. So that's just another ignorant myth out there. He does sound like him. I think it's just because, you know, that Texas, Louisiana sound. And I miss the old-time radio stuff. I miss Johnny Horton's music. Can you imagine if he was alive today, the stuff he'd be writing if he was a true patriot, you know, about elections stolen, you know, and that kind of stuff? We need balladeers for the cause. Looks like I chased some people away with that little bit of history, but I like to honor the people that come before us, just like yesterday, you know, I did that one. On Cooper, and today this one. When I first was falsely informed that the guy who did the Ballad of the Green Beret died on this date, I was going to do a double whammy, but I didn't. Once Lewis did my research for me and found out that was a myth, CBS had reported it wrong. But who's out there today? Who do we have singing? You've got Toby Keith and these guys singing these pro-war songs, support the troops songs. Now, they're politics. I have no idea what they are. But I don't know of any mainline musicians who have got the guts to stand up and write a song about the New World Order. Have got the guts to stand up and write a song about Waco. And there are Waco songs. We've got Steve Vaughn. Steve Voss. Sorry about that. Carl Klang. But this stuff won't get played on the radio. In fact, do you have something we can go out to? Do you have give us something that we can go out to that'll be good here, because we're coming up in about 2 minutes on the break. But I don't know about you guys, but we listen to Johnny Horton every day, don't we, guys? We hear his stuff every day. He is part of the soundtrack of my rebellion, of my remembering back to a kinder, gentler time when we could trust our government to some extent. I know the New World Order was deep-seated in our government, but I love the music. And if you guys know of any music, anyone out there that's doing it, you know, we play the one acoustic song I know of Poker Face, because we're not a heavy metal radio station here. I'm talking about 93.3 FM Vice Jarrett Radio. And when we get this AM talk thing set up, I'm going to be looking for more music. So I need you guys to email links, whatever you can, to me, so we can find more patriotic music. more Confederate music, if you know of some local group that's doing stuff, we want to promote them on here. The American Revolution was full of music. The American so-called Civil War, the War of Federal Aggression, was full of music. We need to find people of these skill sets and use them, because music is, it's empowering. It gets the spirit going. I wish we had a soundtrack for this cause today. It's great to pull back the old stuff. You found it, Lewis, huh? We'll be back after this.
Down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We looked down the river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton fields and didn't say a thing. We fired our guns and the British kept a coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Old Hickory said we could take them by surprise if we didn't fire a musket till we looked them in the eye. We held our fire till we see their faces well. Then we opened up our squirrel guns and really gave them well. We fired our guns and the British kept a coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Down. So we grabbed an alligator and we fought another round. We filled his head with cannonballs and powdered his behind. And when we touched the powder off, the gator lost his mind. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so
thank you for listening to the Dutch Jones Radio Program. And if you get nothing else from our show, there should be two things that you learn. One is, you need to work together with other like-minded people. And number two, you need the basic equipment to keep from becoming a refugee. So whether you're looking for a water filter, tactical gear, surplus gear, or just want to look into some new survival equipment, you need to check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. We carry surplus, and we carry new lines from MilSpec and Voodoo Tactical. And if you don't see it on our website, please send us a message and we'll find it for you. So if you're going to need the gear anyway, why not buy it from us? You'll get it for cheaper than you will from the source, and it'll help out the ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So whether you're new or been in this for a while, check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk.
Gun.
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set
them
roadblocks everywhere!
A new world order. A new world order. A new
attention!
World order.
Attention!
World order.
Attention.
Government is an emergency!
We speak! An emergency!
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody!
Heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap! It's time for
Dutch Jones Radio Program!
And now for something completely different.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Why are you using that guy? I hate that guy. That sports guy. What's his name? What's his name?
Jimmy Rome.
Jimmy Rome or Jim Rome? I can't stand that guy. I hate sports to begin with. Don't. He is forever banned from the Dutch Jones radio show.
Thank you for joining us.
No, go away. The guy looks like a scumbag. He looks.
He's freaky looking.
Yeah, I'm looking at him right now. He looks like he should either be a Las Vegas waiter from hell, or like a child molester or something. I don't like that guy. Jim Rohn, I can't stand the way he sounds.
I'll try to explain that.
Yeah. Well, I guess Oakland's safe. I didn't hear about any rioting. They were all worried about it. They were on alert and stuff. You know, I'm going to read a little bit about that when the article comes up. But this is the Dutch Jones radio program. This is the second half hour of 4 half hours, being 2 hours, that we do Monday through Friday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific time. And it can be heard on Liberty Tree Radio. The second hour, of course, is simulcast. And then, of course, you can hear old shows by going to dutchjones.info and going to the archive thing. There's just like listen to old time past shows. I don't know how Lou worded it. What's it say, Lou? Listen to past shows. Why's your mic way over here? What did you say, Lou? What's the heading?
Past shows.
Thank you. And you can listen to the archives there. There's some archives below us here on New Broadcast, but we have to continually dump them to keep the storage space open so it'll replay. And sometimes we do video, sometimes we don't. Fridays we try to do video for show and tell, which we're going to do here in a little bit, but I'm waiting for this article to load. When I woke up this morning, they said they were worried about riots when they're, you know, this cop, if you remember last year, was it last year or the year before? It always takes forever. When their BART, their Bay Area Rapid Transit officer, said he was going for his taser, and he drilled a guy right in the back. And in the news today, he kept saying shotgun, that he grabbed his shotgun. I've seen the videos. There's multiple videos of the incident. He grabs his pistol and drills the guy in the spine for saying, hey, why am I being arrested? They said sentencing was announced. I want to see what this guy got, what this cop got. And this is just proof that I'm not racist, because this was wrong. I don't care if the guy was black, Chinese, or from Mars. Where is it here? I'm trying to find it here. He got 2 years in prison.
That's it?
2 years in prison for killing a man who simply asked, why am I being arrested? I thought it was my taser. Another reason why I hate tasers. These cops get a poor training with them, if it's even true. It's not true. He just didn't know there'd be that many cameras on him. And the cop, of course, is Johannes Maserl. Maserl. Maserle. Well, people put a shrine up in front of City Hall for the young man that was shot. Let's see, where's the guy's name that was shot? We need to remember that. Smiling. Oscar J. Grant III. They put up a big banner that said Justice for Oscar Grant. The fight is not over. Love to Oscar Grant. We will love and honor you forever. It's just ridiculous that and he wasn't even involved in the incident. There were some people fighting on the subway platform, so the cops just came in like they usually do. They don't know who's doing stuff. So they grabbed everybody black and threw him on the ground, and this kid rolled over. If you've seen the video, it's still up on YouTube. Said, "Why? You know, what's going on?" That kind of thing. And he shot him right between the shoulder blades, killed him instantly. He contends, you know, the 28-year-old officer contends that he mistakenly used his firearm instead of a taser weapon when he shot Grant. But prosecutors argued at his trial that the officer meant to reach for his handgun as he tried to handcuff an unresisting Grant who was laying face down on the platform floor. Now, grainy video footage captured by several witnesses shows the officer, who just happens to be white, fire one round into the back of Grant, who just happens to be black. I don't care about the racial part of it. Now, of course, because, you know, it was white-on-black crime, you know, everybody got all upset. There was some rioting. They burned some stores, you know, that kind of stuff. As they're prone to do, it's kind of sad. But that's how they respond to this, when they should have just gone after the cop. There was looting. It's just an excuse to loot. You know, I don't have any respect for the community in Oakland. They're part of the problem. But savages, most of them, and it has nothing to do with their race. Has to do with the way they choose to live. If you want to live like a savage, I don't care if you're white, brown, pink, or plaid. But it would have been better. Why not go after the cops? You know, if they're shooting black kids there, go after the cops. What, Lou? I got a good comment here. Let me go to that. Okay, cool. just talked to Pastor about the training, and he said the envelope. Oh, cool. Thanks, Minuteman. I appreciate that. Yeah, my afro is very 70-ish. What I actually did is I killed a poodle today. My ears were cold. We're having a cold snap here. It's only 75 degrees today. And I think it's 75. It's 85 today.
It's 75 tomorrow.
And 75 tomorrow, so I had to get my, you know, my cold weather gear out, so I killed a poodle. Actually, what you guys had for lunch, what are you laughing about? Poodle pizza? Yeah, it was poodle pizza, Lou.
From the pizza factory.
Yeah, I snuck it in at the pizza factory. You know, I know the people there. I said, here, use this freshly made meat that I have here. And I made the little head cover there. Put something else up, Lou. The other thing we were practicing with, I want to see the looks on their faces. I can't see the looks on your faces, of course. But anyway, I did want to touch on that shooting because I was enraged when that originally happened. That he was, you know, 2 years for murdering somebody. If you or I, even in our house, shot a burglar while he was on the ground in the back, what would happen to us? Now, a cop, a so-called cop, a policy enforcer, is supposed to know better. He's supposed to have all this training. That's why he gets to carry that gun and why you can't, especially here in California. Police officers supposed to know better. So they give him 2 years. I was going for my taser. I was just going to torture him for challenging me, for not obeying. I just wanted to torture him. That's true, Warland. We get savages everywhere. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Look at what Jerry Brown did. Wasn't he mayor of Oakland? Yeah, Jerry Brown was mayor of Oakland. I don't see it. Where is it?
We didn't take a picture of that.
Oh, where is it? But where's the face? Can you do it on me live? Put the face on me?
Yeah, it's not working, though.
Now it's not working. Figures. Always works in rehearsal.
Your head's not in the right place.
Okay, where's my head?
Okay, go back. Okay,
take the picture.
Okay.
Hey, can I move now?
Yeah.
Okay, guys, there you go. Lou figured out how to do that. Whoa! I don't know what just happened there. How'd you do that, Lou? Oh man. Okay, I'm trying not to move. I can't move my face when he's doing this overlay. Okay. Make that the official... until we get donations, that picture's going to stay up. I'm just kidding. Stacy's all scared.
She's always scared.
Stacy's scared of everything. Yeah, special guest host today. Look what maybe we have to find another place for the puppy to go. I think that's because I ate the poodle. I only eat poodles. I don't eat Jack Russell Terrier mixes. Or is it because Obongo face? I don't know why you wouldn't. But the puppy's a go. The puppy's a go. That is the code word. The puppy is a go. We talked to the pastor today. So things are going good.
I'll protect the puppy.
Stacy's going to protect the puppy. She wants to name... We're getting a puppy from... what am I hearing? Oh, that's my own laughter. We talked to the pastor, but on the way back, you know, Stacy wants to name the puppy Tactical. I can barely say it. I have to slow down. Tactical. And,
then I change.
Yeah. What do you want to... Now she wants to name it Ruger. Yes. Yes. We're going to name the puppy that we're going to get from Navy Davies. Robbie's. He's just not online. Robbie Bobby, as I say. It reminds me... When I say Robbie Bobby, it reminds me of... Talladega Nights.
Oh.
So I hit Robbie Bobby. What's his name? What was his name?
Ricky Bobby.
So, yeah, we're going to get that little puppy, and he'll be a big part of the show. We're going to train him to attack hippies. So we've already picked some hippies out that we're going to use for training. So we'll do that. So, yeah, Stacy loves the puppy, and I, you know, but we're still going to train him to be an attack puppy. Well, we're going to get right into it here. Go ahead and start the video, Lou. Yeah.
Like
what did Minuteman say?
He says, with that, you may
never get... any more donations. Okay, folks. Now, I don't know how many of you have seen these German... they're snow camouflage. Now, normally they're white. We get white ones. And I dye them different colors. I'm going to step back. See, you see how big this is? Here's the hood. I should have Stacy model it for us in the background.
Okay, I will.
Here, put this on and then come into camera in the back. Do it off camera. I don't want to see you juggling with it. It's just too funny and comical. But you can get those cheap. We get them 12 for a low price. You guys can get them from us. Just let us know. We'll put them back up on the website. We bought 12 of them. We sold 6. And now what we're doing is we've got 6 left. We took 3. Turn it around so the hood's in the back. You put it on backwards. She's going to come on camera with it.
Oh, I realized what
I did. Now put your arms through the little armholes across the top.
Hey,
And then put your hood on. And then come stand behind me, please, lovely dear. Right here. We got to see the camera. Okay, stand there. Squat down a little bit so they can see. Now, these things are great veils. Now, this one we've done a kind of a tan. You guys see, I don't know if the camera color is going to come through, but it was bright white. So we did it tan. It comes with the green splotches on it. This is going to be more for our dry season here. And we're going to water resist them. We're going to get Scotch Guard, whatever you want, and we're going to do it. Now, I dyed them in some in buckets, some in the washing machine. We got different tones. We didn't want them all to be uniform. We wanted them to look different. Now, it looks kind of bright in here. I'm looking at the monitor. But it's a good base color for something that we're going to do later, and we're going to talk about it. But you can see, turn around, model the back. Now, if you saw Enemy at the Gates, this is the kind of thing that the Russian snipers use. This is old school. It's a good camouflage. Now, go ahead and take that one off and get the green one on and show them the green one. Now, the green one's going to be for summer. We're in a transitional zone here as far as foliage. Right now, we're in the oaks, the 300-year-old oaks, the live oaks, the white oaks. And it's green most of the year, and then in the darkest, deepest months of winter where it gets down to about 40 degrees here, then the trees go and but you still get the green grass from the rain. In the summer, everything's brown here, burnt. The trees are still green, so it's good to have transitional stuff, different things. So we'll each have two of these. What you saw there is something that would work in the desert. Now, of course, we're going to augment it, and I'm going to show you that later, how you might want to augment it, and using net and garnish and things like that. But you don't want to do too much. You want to make it heavy. Natural camouflage is always good to get on, and I'm going to show you how you can get it on there. Now, you may just want to take a can of spray paint and do it. You know, don't get gloss. Get flat paint. Is she still having trouble there, baby?
I had it inside out.
Now, oh, yeah. Well, you could wear it inside out if you wanted to. Get your arms through the armholes. No, you got to get them through the holes. Put them up on top.
Okay.
Get them all. Yeah, the other one all the way up on top there. Okay, come over and stand back in it. Now, this is the one we've done for when everything's green in the winter. Now, of course, we'll have white ones if we have to go up into the Alpine area, which is only 40 miles from here. We're going to be, 10,000 feet, and it's going to be, there's no glaciers here anymore, but you can see we dyed them. This was supposed to be darker green, but it didn't come out so green, but that's okay. And what we're going to do is we'll add to these, but these are cheap alternatives. And if you water resist them, I hate saying waterproof, it's like saying bulletproof. If you water resist these, you've got a dual purpose. You've got camouflage and a poncho. What I like about these, they're not noisy like the plastic ponchos that we have. We've got these plastic ponchos. They're just cotton.
Cotton.
And they're German, and they're these are probably Vietnam era. They got all kinds of little ties on them to tie stuff up. But if we didn't bring a rifle, but you could hide a rifle under them. Now go over and take it off and do it the way I showed you as a cape. You don't have to wear it covering all your gear where it might be hard to get to. I'm going to show you how you could wear it as a cape. And still use it for momentary stealth, momentary concealment. Let's see here. She can get that on. But you've, like I said, camouflage depends on where you are. Now, if you were to take one of those and just dye it gray and use it in an urban setting, it might work fine, especially in the evenings and failing and dark. You don't want complete black. Black kind of stands out. Just put it on your head. Oh, I see what you're doing. You're trying to make the cape. This worked really well in rehearsal in the kitchen when we were doing this. I know, I did help. She's trying to do it by herself. But then drape it over your shoulders like a cape. No, you're fine. Just go to the ends. There you go. Because you might not feel comfortable with it over the front of you because you can't get to your gear, but come on into the camera now. This thing, and it's a two-ply, and it's going to keep you a little bit more drier, a little more... But another way, old-school German-Russian sniper technique. And you dye it whatever you want. And I just went to what was the fabric store we went to? It wasn't Joanne. Michael's. It was Joanne's Fabric, and we bought a couple bottles of it. And everybody's got 5-gallon buckets. You better, if your wife doesn't want you to ruin the washing machine. But it doesn't ruin the washing machine. I rinsed it out, and it's fine. But, good way to cover yourself up. Now, we're smaller people. I'm only 5'7". Stacy's like 4'12".
No, I'm 5 foot.
That is 5 foot, 4'12". Lou got it. But... good coverage. Now, somebody taller, like, say, for instance, Minuteman, who, what are you, 7'8"? It might not work as good. It doesn't cover your lower legs, so this may not work for you. You may just want to make something out of just bulk fabric. And we saw tons of stuff there. Every camouflage you can imagine, except for multicam, we found at a fabric store. You don't have to go out and buy all this fancy stuff. Now, the thing that I'm talking about here is, hand me that netting back there. Every ghillie suit, and I'm going to show you my finished ghillie suit here in a minute. This is what we use. These fishing nets. Let's see. Can you see this? We cut them to shape. These are about $12 for one that will be big enough. This one's actually still a fishing net. I mean, this is way bigger than you would need. This would make like two ghillie suits out of this, or cover the cape there. What you would do is you would sew this directly to that material. And I would do it about every 6 inches so that it doesn't sag, it doesn't snag. You sew it up. Most of mine I sew all the way around, especially on my pants. And you're going to see a pair of my pants. But this fishing net is really good. Smells like fish. You might want to soak it in some stuff. It would make it harder for the dogs to find. Although, it may cover up your human scent. You know, talk about that. But these fishing nets, you go down. I bought these at Michael's. These were actually donated to our militia from Friend of the Militia. But good stuff to get. And they sell them in home decor spaces because people like to do like an ocean thing where they staple them to the wall and they put some seashells on them. I've seen people use them to suspend stuffed animals from the ceiling of their baby's bedroom. They just keep them stuffed up there. Actually, that might be a good use for them too. Just store, you know, bulk items, sleeping bags, blankets from the ceiling of your hooch. But really good tool here. And what you do is, and I like the tight net, but I've seen people use volleyball net, whatever you got. Whatever you have is what you use, right? The burlap that I dyed today, I left it. It still wasn't dry. It's down on the clothesline. But then you would tie jute, string, burlap straps in here. Now, somebody hand me the jacket first. Actually, can you find the hat? Where's the hat? The hat's on top, isn't it? One of them's the hat. Where's the hat? No, you don't have to model. Well, actually, you can model it if you want. But let me put it on your head and stand back so they can see it. You're going to need headgear or a hood. If yours doesn't have a hood, come over here. You're going to have to garnish up some headgear. Is that working, Lou? Because I'm looking at it at an angle. Move over. Watch the monitor. Yeah. It comes down, covers the face, covers the nape of the neck. Turn around. It goes down. There's some Velcro stuck in here. Probably from one of my cheek pieces. But it should come down and hang. And in here, you're going to see different material. Everything you see in here was purchased at Walmart at their fabric store. This camouflage netting, we were looking at it yesterday. Remember that, Lou? I use this. This is really good, this stuff. You remember the sniper veils that you used to be able to get? You probably still can get them. They're like $12. You can tie natural garnish in it. This fabric wasn't even camouflage. This is just a green and two-tone green speckled fabric that I bought like 4 yards of it and sat in front of the TV and stripped it out with scissors and then tore it. And, of course, you've got jute. Those of you that don't know what jute is, think hemp, but it's twine. It's packing twine. But it's unraveled here, and it's tied through the hat. And turn around. Now, some people may like to have a face covering. We have masks that fit to our face that also have garnish on them, so I don't do that. I didn't incorporate it into the hat. Does it stink? A good ghillie suit should smell like the outdoors. This one spends a lot of time just laying out in the field. Okay, give me that. Now, what I used for it was a hat. That was just, I bought it at a hardware store. It was like something, it's camouflaged with this strange South African pattern here, right here. Sorry, I'm not looking at the camera, guys. But you've got this thing that protects the neck already, keep the sun on the neck. It's something like a yard worker would use. It's got a nice sweatband in it. It's like a terry cloth sweatband. I'm very particular about what I use for my hats. I'm a sweater. I'm a fat guy. So this has got a nice terry cloth in there. I like it. And what I did is I just sewed the fit. Let's see, you can see the fishing net here. I'm told that this doesn't stutter when you guys watch this. But you can do this here. Minuteman saying don't cut the burlap in straight strips. It makes it wriggle and fray evenly. Good one. Yeah, it's my reggae hat also. So, yeah, I basically what I do is I jagged cut the strips. Now, you can buy pre-done strips. You can even buy a pre-made ghillie suit. But I'm here to tell you, ghillie suits are not bought, they're made. You should make one to fit your terrain, your abilities, your strengths. See the fishing net in here? Tie it. I sit in front of the TV and I do this. We watch training videos. I'm getting ready to make 3 more ghillie suits this week for us. And then if people want me to make one, they're not cheap. I'm going to charge you about $200 for a ghillie suit. You know, you can go buy. I can go buy one for $100.
Yeah,
but I make it, and I also send you some advice on how to use it. They're terrible. Since I took the sniper class at Fort Benning, Georgia, as a marksman for the MPs, I've probably made 150 ghillie suits. I made them for SWAT team members. I made them for Serbian resistance fighters, which is now illegal, I found out. I used to ship them overseas, and that's illegal. This is now an item of war and is illegal for me to ship overseas. So if you're picking this up from overseas, we have to send it as like a rug. I'll send you a rug. You know, we can't call it a ghillie suit. For those of you that don't know, ghillie suit is a Scottish name. It was used by the Scottish gamekeepers. It means guy or dude. It literally means guy or dude kind of thing. It's like it's slang. And what they would do is they would wear burlap sacks and torn clothing to catch poachers on the stately men's estates. You know, they'd come and take the nobleman's deer, so ghillie suit. They were used heavily in World War I. I don't know about the Spanish-American War. In the war betwixt the states, not so much. In the American Revolution, they just wore buckskins and earth tones. But the ghillies, the Scottish, and I'm proud of that because I'm half Scottish, half Dutch, came up with this. You'll see solid green, olive drab. And what you would do is if you're in a terrain that, say, has got a lot of yellow flowers in it, you attach them using your garnish. Put some yellow flowers in it. Long grasses. You want long grasses, you stick them down the back. But good little setup here for the headgear. Have to have the headgear. What good is it if you're wearing this great cape of camouflage if you're, you know, your head sticking out and your bald, shiny head's there, even if you're wearing camouflage? The human head, okay. The human brain does a thing called matrixing. It looks for human shapes where they don't belong. That's how you get all these little ghost sightings and, you know, all that kind of stuff. People go, oh, I saw the face of Jesus in a tortilla. That's called matrixing. You're looking for patterns. God made your brain do that for some reason to identify humans, maybe so you wouldn't shoot them or you'd run from them if they were dangerous. You want to break up the head. You know, make it look like a bush, glob. It can be lopsided. It doesn't have to be symmetrical in the head because your head's the target, right? You hear what I'm saying? So it can be misshapen. Now, I've seen ghillie suits for cities. I've seen ghillie suits for urban areas where they have trash on them. I saw one, this great guy in Britain, Shepherd, who's a sniper over there that teaches. He has milk cartons on his. It looks like bricks. He has material that looks like bricks. Okay, give me the jacket next. I don't want to carry this over to the next hour, but we will if we have to. I hate getting in the middle of Liberty Tree Radio in the middle of a lesson, but... Okay, go ahead and put it on. Yeah, this one's kind of heavy.
They can't hear you when you turn away from the mic.
Oh, they can't hear me when I turn away from the mic? Okay, I won't turn away from the mic. Thank you, guys. Thank you for letting me know that. Luke can always turn my mic up when I do that. Okay, now put it on and turn around. Turn around stays. Okay. Full back goes down to about the knees, overlap of the pants that I'm going to show you last. I put a lot into the pants, that's why I say that. So we're going to do it. So lots of the same garnish, the same netting. Slowly rotate around for me, please, and show them. From behind, you should look like a Yeti, or even better, you should look like a bush. Keep going. Lift your arms up. Now, one of the things you'll notice is it doesn't follow the line of the arm. I have like a bat wing type scenario going on here. Lift your arm up again. You got to hold your arms up. So I went to the club today, and it connects across. You want to break up the known shape of the human body. Keep turning around. Now, this is a raincoat that I put this on. This is actually a Cuban raincoat. Keep going. In the front, you don't have a lot of garnish, but you could make a drape that would go across if you were going to be moving tactically in a semi. You don't want to walk, but you know what I'm saying? So in the front, you might want to put – I have another cloth that goes across the front. But normally, you're going to be laying down, prone, right? So this is okay here. Some people like to put a couple of things up front. When I'm doing it, I'm a man of leisure. The steadiest shot is from prone. I'm going to lay down. If I'm moving around in terrain where they can see me, then I may put some garnish on the front. Now, of course, this suit isn't designed. If I carry a backpack, the backpack's not going to be covered by the garnish. So I have other stuff that goes over my backpack. Don't forget about your backpack. It's a cover that goes over it. It's the same material. Same material. And so we'll do that. Okay, so you have access to your pockets. What?
I was going to say, this was all handmade.
Yeah, all handmade. I didn't buy this. I didn't do it from a kit. It's the Dutch Jones kit. Did it all myself. Here's some digital.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just all around, it's going to be different. And I may cut some of this off in the field. There's a lot on here. This is what's considered a heavy, dense one. Some of them are a lot less, and that's all you may need for where you're at. But I can take this off and put it on a weapon. If I pick a weapon up on the battlefield and it's a big black rifle, what good is it if I'm wearing all this if I've got on a bipod out in front of me, a big black rifle? I can take garnish off of this and wrap it around the scope, wrap it around the barrel, so it's extra. I pick up an assistant spotter along the way. Lou comes up. I can start tearing this stuff off and just tying it all over his uniform. Okay, go ahead and take that off and bring me the pants. You don't have to put the pants on.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not going to make you put the pants on. Now, one of the biggest obstacles to being a sniper, one of the biggest skill sets, I guess I should say, is being able to move from point A to point B without being detected. You spend a lot of time on your belly crawling about. So you want friction durable materials. That's why I went with military grade raincoats and things. But I spent, for me, it's my knees. My knees get tore up. I tear through the pants. Now, you can wear knee pads. Everybody I know wants knee pads, but they move. They constrict blood flow on my legs. They never stay where they're supposed to be. I don't care. I've had the nicest Blackhawk ones. I bought cheap ones at the hardware store. None of them work. So first what I want to show you is this. Let me see that. I don't know if that shows up. The entire length of the leg, because I'm a short feller, I put a pad on it. The whole thing is a pad. It looks silly, but it's very comfortable. I can lay down behind my rifle and go to sleep if I have to when my spotter's watching. We're going to come back after the break. I'm going to talk more about my fancy pants. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back after the break.
The fastest ship that ever sailed the sea. On her decks were guns as big as steers and sails as big as trees. Out of the cold and foggy night came the British ship, the Hood. And every British seaman, he knew and understood. They had to sink the Bismarck, the terror of the sea. Stop those guns as big as steers and those shells as big as trees. To find that German battleship that's making such a fuss. We gotta sink the Bismarck, cause the world depends on us. Hit the decks, a running boys, and spin those guns around. But when we find the Bismarck, we gotta cut her down. The Hood found the Bismarck, and on that fatal day, the Bismarck started firing 15 miles away. We gotta sink the Bismarck, was the battle sound. But when the smoke had cleared away, the mighty Hood went down. For 6 long days and weary nights, they tried to find her trail. Churchill told the people, put every ship a sail. Cause somewhere on that ocean, I know she's gotta be. We gotta sink the Bismarck to the bottom of the sea. They find that German battleship that's making such a fuss. We gotta sink the Bismarck, cause the world depends on us. Hit the decks, a running boys, and spin those guns around. When we find the Bismarck, we gotta cut her down. The fog was gone the seventh day, and they saw the morning sun. 10 hours away from homeland, the Bismarck made its run. The admiral of the British fleet said, turn those bows around. We found that German battleship, and we're gonna cut her down. The British guns were aimed, and the shells were coming fast. The first shell hit the Bismarck, they knew she couldn't last. That mighty German battleship is just a memory. Sink the Bismarck was the battle cry that shook the seven seas. We found that German battleship was making such a fuss. We had to sink the Bismarck cause the world depends on us. We hit the deck a-running and we spun those guns around. Yeah, we found that mighty Bismarck and we had to cut her down. We found that German battleship for making such a fuss. We had to sink the Bismarck cause the world depends on us. We hit the deck a-running and we spun those guns around. We found that mighty Bismarck and then we cut her down.
Thank you for listening to the Dutch Jones Radio Program. And if you get nothing else from our show, there should be two things that you learn. One is, you need to work together with other like-minded people. And number two, you need the basic equipment to keep from becoming a refugee. So whether you're looking for a water filter, tactical gear, surplus gear, or just want to look into some new survival equipment, you need to check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. We carry surplus, and we carry new lines from MilSpec and Voodoo Tactical. And if you don't see it on our website, please send us a message and we'll find it for you. So if you're going to need the gear anyway, why not buy it from us? You'll get it for cheaper than you will from the source, and it'll help out the ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So whether you're new or been in this for a while, check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk.
There is rebellion in the wind.
can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points, bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention. Attention.
Government is
an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones. Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. Welcome. A big hearty welcome to all of our Liberty Tree Radio listeners. Thank you for jumping in and joining the discussion. If you would like to talk to us, you can come to our chat room over here on ubroadcast.com or dutchjones.info. And you got to sign up. I know people don't like signing up. Or you can come to us through Facebook. Facebook, just look for Dutch Jones and start sending me IMs. Ask to be my friend. I'll add you as my friend. Or you can call us, 559-561-8225, right?
Yeah.
559-561-8225, and we'll put you right on the air, and we'll talk about whatever you want. We covered a lot of stuff in the first hour that you guys missed that are just joining us. We talked about Johnny Horton. That's why we're playing a lot of his songs today. Today is the anniversary of his death. He was killed by a drunk driver, and he kind of had worries that he'd be killed by a drunk, and he was. But we did a little tribute to him, talked about his life history, and I made the comment that we need more balladeers to talk about the cause today. And if you know of any good current patriotic music that I can play on our Christian radio station, we don't play Poker Face because it's just a little too loud. Although we do have that one song, I Pray for America.
Yeah.
We have a lower acoustical version of that, folky sounding that we play, and they love it. So I need to call them and see if they have any more like that that we'd be allowed to play. Well, before the break, the second half hour of the show was we're covering Geely suit manufacturing. Don't go buy one. Geely suits are made, not bought. Now, you can buy the materials. You know, don't get me wrong. I don't want you to go out and start your own jute factory or weave your own burlap. But we're talking about, I've already shown the old school sniper veil type setup that the Germans and like the Russians used. If you've seen Enemy at the Gate, then you understand what I'm talking about. We've got some of that material. If you want to see it, you got to go back and rewatch the whole show. You do that at dutchjones.info, and you can go to the archives, or you can watch the reloop replay until we do another show on Monday. So that's where that's at. So when we last left you, we were talking about my pants. I love saying stuff like that on the radio. What are you laughing at, Lou? Lou's playing with the overlay on the camera. He's having fun, and I always want him to have fun. Comment was made during the break. Make sure you leave room for your local plants and whatever foliage is in the area. Now, and I said that, so I need to see it a little stronger, but let me show you here. If you look at this, you know, even as dense as these pants look from behind, you know, looks like Bigfoot walking away from you. If you move the stuff away, the garnish away, it's not every square. Don't do every square. What I used to do when I tie the stuff in, I tie it in, then I throw it on the floor, let it sit there for a while, look at it, and see where the blank spots were. Because you want to leave some of these squares open to stick a prickly bush in. You know, stick some gypsum weed in there. Stick some, whatever you can put in there that doesn't slow you down. So that's a good point, and I have to reiterate it. Look here, there's a whole bunch of squares that aren't covered. When I first started making Geely suits, I went square by square. And that's just madness. You don't need that kind of coverage. And plus, believe me, it makes, even before it gets wet, this thing gets very heavy. So if you did stuff on every square, you'd be surprised. All these little things add up in weight and would slow your movement and also create fatigue. And you don't need fatigue. You don't want it dragging down below your boots. You don't want stuff that's going to fray and leave a trail. You want materials that are going to be sturdy that you can tie to other things, you can use even for other purposes. You want to stay away from flammable stuff. You want to stay away from absorbent things, although burlap, people go, oh, well, burlap doesn't really absorb much. And a lot of it I've gotten has been treated with some type of water-resistant material. Some burlaps and jutes are actually have a flammable quality to them, so you may want to soak them in water for a while to get away the whatever chemicals they use. Somebody told me they actually soak it in gas for some reason. I can't prove that, but that was just something I heard early on. And remember I told you the contact? If you look here, I sewed like every all the way along this. I don't want to be crawling along the ground and have a branch go in and get snagged. It can happen, but sew as close as you can on the legs, especially on the knees. Now, when we were last talking, I was talking about the pads. What I did is, you know the military sleeping bag rolls, the gray ones? I cut those up to fit here. I laid them out there. I got some vinyl. It was kind of a grayish green. It was on sale for like a dollar. Diesel, that's what Ed's saying. It was diesel, not gasoline. Ed's saying that they soak it in diesel. Thank you, Ed. And what I did is I got this vinyl for a dollar a foot. It's literally for like doing a chair or something. You can hear it. It's real, real, real durable stuff. Put the pad in. I sewed it like a pocket, slipped the pad in, then sewed it across the top. And I can rest in these things. My elbows, all that kind of stuff. You know, you have the pads on it. You make it flexible inside. You can go out and spend all this money and buy, you know, all the little gadgets, and it's going to be more than what it would cost you to make this or to even have me make it if you compartmentalize it all. The kits are good with the dyed stuff. I've been experimenting lately because they've been making camouflage-colored yarns for ladies making shawls. Stacy has a love shawl that somebody made for the pastor's wife made for a church. It's camouflage. Really lightweight. Really lightweight. How hard is it to put on a gas mask when you're wearing the suit? Now, the military gas mask, I had no problem putting them on. I wear gloves that have garnish on them and stuff. It slows you down a bit. I mean, I'm not going to say, you know, it's going to be the same. That's a great question, Warlin. But, yeah, you got to learn to wear a mask in this. What I do in my jacket, I have a pouch sewn into the back where I can put a water bladder. Look at ease of comfort, access to clothes. Now, another way, and I haven't done it this way in years just because I got off on the two-piece. I like the two-piece because sometimes I just want to wear the jacket. And stock. I use it for hunting, for bow hunting. And I've always used ghillie suits. When I was a kid, my father and I made ghillie suits out of burlap long before I took the sniper course at Fort Benning. We would sneak up on antelope wearing burlap and stuff. So it's a long heritage of it, but I like the two-piece. Now, the way the military had us make them is we took flight suits that were larger than us, turn them inside out. You turn the flight suits inside out so you can use the inside pockets, and you sew the garnish and stuff on the outside. And a ghillie suit, like a work of art, is never really done. You're always messing with it. You're always putting seasonal and local foliage into it, maybe experimenting, saying, hey, you know, that thing didn't work well. I used to make several, and several of the ones I made were for paintball, and I learned a lot that way, you know, seeing what people, you know, why, how'd you see me? How'd you see that guy? What I literally do now is when I make a new one, I take it up on the mountainside, and I place it out there, and I tell people to look for it. And if they can't find it within a reasonable amount of time with optics or walking around the field, I know I've done it right. If they go right to it and go, well, what'd you see? Well, these big green buttons on the front of the pants have a shine to them. Get out a piece of sandpaper and rough up the buttons or replace them with something that doesn't have a shine to them. I remember one time I was in a paintball tournament, and I thought I had the best sniper hide, everything, and I get this paintball out of nowhere. And I'm like, where'd that come from? How'd you see me? There was a zipper on the back of the field jacket. It was not a military field jacket. It was like a hunting jacket that hid the hood, and it was shiny. And the guy saw it and shot me right in the back of the head, actually a little lower on the neck. But experiment with them. Look at what you can see on them. Ghillie suits are great. If you're just starting out, just do a jacket. Just do a poncho. Go get a piece of fabric, cut a hole in the head, reinforce it by sewing it. You guys need to learn how to sew. Don't be counting on. There's a sewing machine in the background here. I think you guys can see it. Can they see that sewing machine? Because we got ladies here doing all the sewing. I'm probably the only guy here that sews. I don't have to pay some lady to do stuff for me. Everybody here has to pay the lady. And that's cool. That's a little economy, especially for our single women and our widows. But you should be making your own ghillie suits. You should be making your own pouches. Now, the other things you can do, you can sew extra pockets on. If you got just a rain jacket that's got nothing, you want to put a big old pocket in front for a metal plate, you know, to be a little more, you can do it. These are skills that you as men need to have. Don't just put them on the women. It's just like we tell the women, they need to learn to shoot and sew up a wound. But men, it goes the other way too. You have to do these things. And I tell you something, people ask me, how long does it take to make a ghillie suit? I don't know, because I enjoy the process so much. It's messy, and I'll talk about that in a little bit, especially if you're using the jute and the burlap. But I just enjoy, I sit in front of the TV and I do it, and next thing you know, I've got like the whole arm done, and then I stop. And the reason I do that is so I don't make it look asymmetrical. I know guys that would like, okay, this part I'm going to do the V of the back. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And it's you know, you know, you work on it that way. It's going to look symmetrical. And remember the matrix thing I talked about, the way the brain works? It's going to look for it. Let's see. Navy Davy, not trying to be funny, but couldn't the animal smell you? Yeah, the worst enemy from of a sniper point of view is a dog. Dogs can find you, but you find ways to do that. I mean, you've seen it in the movies, rolling horse manure. I let, you know, other dogs play with this thing, chew on it, pull it, roll in it. But then again, that may draw them in. You know, so you don't smell like a human. If you smell like a bush, they may, you know, you see, you know, you try and smell inert if you can. Minuteman Stainer, get a sniper tog for majors and use as a starting point. Yeah, I do like that sniper tog. In fact, I want to get one. If I had the money, I'd buy it, and we will sell them to you. Give us a call or give us an email, and I'll show you what Minuteman's talking about. We can sell them to you. We have access to those sniper togs, and it's a good base to start. It's kind of like a matador jacket with tails, and it's a good way. It's got the hood. It's got the strips already in. But I prefer just doing my own, but I may get one of those and have Lou do his first one on that sniper tog. I was going to talk about that later, so you jumped the gun there, Minuteman. But, yeah, about 7 days and evenings if you make one. Is a good time frame, but the you're going to make your wife angry because the burlap and the jute is going to get over everything. You think dog hair is hard to get out of a couch? Try vacuuming out burlap. So some of the stuff, if you're not using fabric or yarn, then you might want to be doing it in the garage. Shake them out. I used to drag mine behind my four-wheel drive to get all the you know, kind of give it the ragged look. Literally just hook it to a line, a piece of parachute cord, throw it out the back, and go four-wheeling and drag it around. You know, and keep an eye on it if it snaps or something. But we drag it down dirt roads, rough it up, break it in. Put them outside to get them to fade evenly. And that's the enemy of a ghillie suit is fading. Once it starts to fade, you get light spots and things, and they show up, and it's time to change the garnish. Especially if you do a lot of field work, it may fade depending on the quality of the material you use. You have the fissionating for the lower part of the back. Yeah, you could do that. On the sniper tog one, you've got. Don't forget your weapons. Make veils for your weapons. Just cut a piece, you know, maybe 12 to 14 inches wide, long enough to cover your weapon. We like using. We use the netting and throw it over them. Those types of things. These are things that should be in your shooter kit anyway. Like I said, I take stuff off my jacket and add it to a rifle. My rifle's already camouflaged. You guys have seen that. My scout rifle. I'm not a sniper. I'm a marksman. So I'll decorate up the. What am I, a Borg now? Is there something floating over my eye?
Yeah.
What is this?
I don't
know. He's putting stuff in front of my eye. Oh wow! I can manipulate it. Look at that. That was pretty cool, Lou. But this is something that you need to be working on because of the nature, especially how this group is going to be defending itself. Not standing toe-to-toe, the force multiplier of being a sniper defends heavily on proper concealment. And even though it's sad, you may be taking shots where there's no cover available. You go out to the National Training Center out at Fort Irwin, and you know, you've got 2,000-yard shots that they're training people to do out there with these new space-age weapons and everything, and they're just laying behind a pile of dirt that they've pushed up in front of them, but you can't see them. So, you know, you can trace the round back to them. That's a whole other thing. Create a camouflage mat that can go out, you know, a drop cloth that can go down in front of your weapon and have enough water that you can wet down the water in front of your weapon. Because let's say you're using a large caliber, 300 Winchester Magnum all the way up to the ever-so-popular 50 cal. You're using a bipod or shooting off your backpack. You're going to disrupt the soil in front of your shooting position, and it's going to raise dust up. You know, that's more if you're in a desert area or a dry area. Here, you know, you just find a place that the water, you know, the soil is already damp enough and you can take the shots. And, of course, everybody knows the rule, don't take more than one shot if you can and move. Shoot and move, shoot and move, shoot and move. In reality, you may not be able to, so you want to make it as hard for them to find you as possible. The other thing is you want to find some overhead material. If you want to take an extra chunk, you know, if you can carry it, 12 by 12 of fishnet so you can cover yourself from the sky. Our biggest enemy is, you know, people think 360 on two dimensions. They don't think above them. They don't think, what are they looking down at? A satellite can see your, you know, your body heat signal. Yeah, I know that. But if they can't really make out what you're doing, you know, from a helicopter, you know, not everybody's going to have access to a satellite. So, you know, look at covering yourself from above with some netting. Even small. You don't need to bring a big old camouflage net. Just something you could throw up above you. Some of the stuff I've seen lately, I'm really impressed with. The sniper school's come a long way from 1984 when I was there. They're really using a lot of stuff. They're sending out, one of the things I like is spray adhesive. So you have your tan tarp that's got its little blotches and everything on it. Well, you want some three dimension to it. You spray it with this spray adhesive and then throw soil on it, throw leaves on it. It adds a little more. If they're looking across the terrain and they see all of a sudden where you've dug in, it's a smooth spot where nothing's growing. That looks a little weird. You want to do that, especially if you're building your position at night. You're moving it at night and then during the day. Now, one of the things the Germans used to like to do is they would, during the night in the no man's land during World War I, they would remove a tree and replace it with an exact replica of an iron tree and hide behind it with a little slot and shoot out of it. Very, with modern call for artillery and, you know, and indirect fire, that's very dangerous. But get creative like that. You don't have to carry an iron tree, but carry some chicken wire along. Think about, you know, if chicken wire is just three-dimensional fishnet, you know, fishing net. You can bend it, mold it any way you want, cover it with all kinds of debris. Real good to do. Umbrellas. Now, the Germans on the Eastern Front, we are back.
Okay.
And then tell them to reset. Okay, folks, if you just tuned in and you're looking for the Dutch Jones radio program, it says, where's the intro? We got knocked off the air. Seems like when I talk about really good tactical stuff, we get dropped. But I'm just talking about news articles and stuff. We don't get knocked off. Have you noticed that? you got to go to DutchJones.info to the archives that Olima puts up. And listen to past shows, and you can hear the first hour and 20 minutes was fantastic. You missed an amazing show. Right now you're going to get hopefully a big chunk here. Listen to this and go back and listen to the front of the show. So it won't replay here. If you want to hear the whole show, you have to go to the archives. And we're back, and we were talking about the Germans using this umbrella device, sliding behind it, moving behind it. There's no reason why you can't use it today. Go buy an umbrella, get your Gerber tool out, start messing with it, tweaking it. Find one that's got an earth tone to it. It's a great tool to hide behind it. And it's good, smart sniper tactics. Now, all this stuff I'm telling you is nothing I'm making up. I have taken this from, I've probably read 20 to 30 books on sniping. I've been to two or three classes, one military, two civilian, on the proper use of precisely placed rounds. I talk often about the efficiency of it and what, you know, the force multiplier value of it. You know, a $2 round can take out a multi-million dollar aircraft, you know, at 2,000 yards away if you know what you're doing. But all the shooting skills in the world, the biggest, you know, 700 grain bullet or whatever, isn't going to do you any good if you can't live to fight another day or take that shot from a position that can't be detected and you can get out and over the hill. So a sniper's skill is 10% shooting. The rest is 90% getting to the location to take the shot. People are going to argue with me on that, but I've done it. I've been there. Most of these guys that take these civilian classes that I know that tell me some of them even said I'm a liar that I never went to this. Okay, fine, whatever. But the fact of it is, getting there is half the battle. Hiding yourself, field craft, taking the shot is a very small part. The majority of military snipers spend their time observing and reporting and calling for fire. That's mostly what I did. And everybody asked me, well, how many kills do you have? I'm not going to talk about that. Ask me how many lives I saved by taking care of something that was going down the road that didn't need to be going down the road. Or shutting down an OPLP with indirect fire and they had no idea where I was. The most effective weapon a sniper has, as far as offensive, is his radio. And it's not very glamorous, is it? Doesn't make for good movies. Some guy going, knowing how to call out a 10-digit grid coordinate and properly walk fire in on a location. Not very glamorous. It looks good as an add-on to these sniper movies. But everybody wants to see the point of view of the bullet and exploding heads and all that. Nah. The real meat and potatoes, and that's why not everybody can be a sniper, is the field craft. And being able to get into position and get out and survive it to serve another day. Guys like Carlos Hathcock, if you broke it down, the time that they actually spent breathing, sight picture, checking the wind, having their spotter feed them data if they did, and pulling the trigger, wasn't very much compared to getting into that position and knowing the terrain, knowing the local people, knowing the habits of what you're supposed to be watching, the people or the activities. So the ghillie suit's just the beginning. Putting your kit together is everybody wants to spend time on the range shooting and zeroing their weapon. That's great. That's important. Learning to do the dope in your head, all that kind of stuff. I can't really teach that over the radio. That's something you have to do on your own. You have to go and take. There are certain things that militiamen have to seek out professionally and have themselves be trained in. Just like I tell everybody, you need to go to Front Sight. You need to go to DFT if you live here in California, Nevada area, and get some professional weapons handling training. And they have sniper schools there. You can do everything that I'm telling you and more. Because I can't show you how to properly set up your weapon over the radio with a, you know, a choppy camera that falls out. But I can put in your minds the right mindset. I mean, the different types of low crawls. How can I show you that? You know, is it a monkey walk? Is it, you know, a low crawl? Which, how do you carry your weapon? Those types of things. What's, you know, I can tell you things like the minimum distance we were allowed to take a shot was 300 meters. Yards, for those of you that get mad at me when I use the European version. 300 meters is the minimum distance for field fire. I mean, you know, urban's different. But and the other thing, cops that call themselves snipers, now maybe they served overseas and all that, but a guy who shoots someone in the head from 50 meters to me is not a sniper. Lewis can do that. Now, he may not be able to do it under stress or something, but he can shoot a balloon at 50 meters no problem every single time. Don't call cops snipers. They're sharpshooters. There's a difference. A sniper is somebody who's paid his dues, is physically fit, has a mental awareness of a hunter that can get in and out of an area, not somebody who gets dropped on a roof by a helicopter and sets her. Now, our snipers are being misused now in these so-called wars. And, you know, I'm not knocking them because they're being misdeployed. They're not being used properly. They're putting five or six snipers on a roof and leaving them there all day. They're showing them being, you know, put on the roof. They're showing their, you know, when they're extracted. It's just ridiculous. But we in the militia, if we're going to be smart, we need to know how to get around our terrains. I don't talk a lot about urban stuff. I mean, I could. I'm talking about putting, you don't shoot out of the window. You don't protrude your barrel out of the window. You step back in the room. If you have to stack up a desk and a school desk on top of that desk with pillows and everything and then put a veil up in front and shoot through the veil, that's what you do. You know, if you have to make loopholes, murder holes in the building, that's what you do. So in your kit, you have to have the tools to do those kind of things. You know, and these people that go out and they spend all the gear, all the money on the gear, and they don't train with it anywhere but the range, you're kidding yourself. You're just kidding yourself. You would no sooner be better at it than I would right now in the terrible physical shape I'm in now. I don't care if, you know, you're physically fit, but if you don't know how to deploy yourself, much less your gear, you're not going to be of any use to anyone at all. Knowing the psychology of how humans think, how they react, is very important for sniper duty. Knowing how your primary target's going to react, your secondary targets, or, I mean, whatever your SOPs are, of course, how you operate. Do you have targets of opportunity? Do you have specific targets? Are you just there as a sniper watching a certain length of road until somebody comes by to warn people? All that has to come into play. It's not about pulling the trigger, just about pulling the trigger. Now, you're going to have to, the people ask me stuff like, as a sniper, you may have to stay in one position for days. I found that every time they sent us out for 4 days, we'd bring 5 days of supplies, we'd be there for 10, almost every single time. You have to have a survival mindset and a hunting mindset where you're like, okay, I've got 5 days' supply of food, but I know how these idiots work. They're going to leave me on this hill for 10 days. So you have to start rationing your food between you and your spotter if you're alone. You know, yourself. Wow, that went quick. Up next, we're going to talk about the fun stuff, like how do you go to the bathroom when you're a sniper. We'll be back after the break. More Johnny Horton.
He who had a party tossed in tea in Boston Bay. It was he who braved the winter in the days of Valley Forge. Fighting side by side together with a fella named of George.
Johnny Freedom, you can be here.
started growing and the wagons headed west. When a country called for pioneers, his name led all the rest. What a figure in his rawhide coat and hat made of raccoon. Wonder what there was about him made you think of Dan O'Boone. Of thinking he's the Lincoln of the day. If we're fixing for a tussle, it's his muscle all the way. If we need a handsome fella so the ladies' hearts can throb, there's a Yankee Doodle Dandy, always handy for the job.
In the best conditions, the human body will die after 3 days without water. Having access to clean, drinkable water in a disaster, survival situation, or military action is critical when putting together your survival plan and survival kit. Whether you choose to boil, filter, purify, or use some type of chemical treatment, something must be done when planning your survival, escape routes, and plans, and putting together your bug-out bag or simply your rucksack. That's why I have chosen to offer Sawyer brand water filters. These filters used in the medical industry for kidney dialysis exceed the needs for water purification. With different units available, the basic unit that you should get will be capable of filtering up to 500 gallons a day and will not need to be replaced until you have surpassed 1 million gallons through that filter. I know that's hard to believe, but it's a fact. They've been using these filters overseas for years in the missionary fields and in post-disaster recovery efforts. The filters are lightweight and simple to use, so whether you attach it to a 5-gallon bucket, to a water bladder, or to a 10,000-gallon tank, these filters can do the job for you. They can handle up to 40 PSI, and with different fittings and ingenuity, you can even apply them to inside, inline water supply systems into your house, cabin, or survival structure. So I'm asking you to go to djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. Check out the Sawyer water filters. Order them through us. You will save at least $5 off the retail price of buying them from Sawyer Direct. And as always, the money goes to help the radio ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So, do something right for your family, get them prepared for a disaster or calamity, and you're helping us out. So don't forget, djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. Check out the Sawyer brand water filters.
Government is the
There's
problem.
Rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
For nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel
in. Put out an all-points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention. Attention.
Government is an
emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going
to
call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones, Dutch Jones
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
You didn't have any sound effects to play for that. This is the Dutch Jones radio program. Welcome back. Looks like we're losing listeners. I guess I'm offending people again, talking about actual realistic things that need to be put in your head. I'm not talking about all the glorious stuff about, you know, marching on Washington or slapping people around. I'm talking about stuff you need to know. And people don't like that. I see the same thing, you know, happens within my personal life here with people that I have face-to-faces with. They just don't want to know. They don't want to talk about the down and dirty, ugly stuff. They want to go buy all the tactical gear, look really cool, put their pictures up on their Facebook page, and do YouTube videos that are like where they sit there and go, look how neat I am because I can run around with an airsoft gun. People don't like the realistic stuff. And these are the people that don't know how to use a compass. These are the people that don't know how to build a fighting position. These are the people that don't know how to even take... I mean, like, I could do a whole show on hygiene, and I'd probably have three listeners. It's really sad. It's really sad. We're not going to get anywhere in this cause if people don't realize that they need to pay attention to this stuff. Minuteman's saying it's also Friday. Oh, come on. Everybody knows militia people don't have lives. We've foregone our lives. We don't have dates. We don't have movies to go to. There's no TGI Fridays wear your Minuteman patch and get in for free. That could be it. I just get angry sometimes at the attitudes of people that don't want to do the hard stuff. They want to do the easy stuff. They don't want to go to the gym and realize they're just not in shape anymore and they're going to have to fight hard to get to at least a fightable battle weight, right? Telling you folks, I went to the gym again today. We worked different muscle groups and it took me 17 minutes to do a mile. When I was in the Army, I'd do a mile in under 7 minutes. Under 7 minute mile when I was in the Army. I did 2 miles in like 12 minutes, 35 seconds, something like that. You know, that's what we do. So, rest on or red dawn? Okay. Scotty put our Bible verse up today. Let me read that. I can't leave the air without doing a Bible verse. My glasses are fogging over, so I'm going to squint here. For the grace of God that bringeth salvation hath appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world, looking for that blessed hope and the glorious appearing of the great God and our Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us, that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works. Titus, book 2, verses 11 through 14. That's a good one. I like that. Zealous of good works. Do not despise the little things. Learning how to put your sniper kit together. I even refrain from using the word sniper because so many people want to go, yeah, I'm a sniper. Yeah, I'm a sniper. I get so many Vietnam vets that lie to me about it. And flat out, you know, I don't call Vietnam vets on anything. I just figure while they were there, if they were even there. But if somebody presents themselves, I'll let it go. But it'd be like, you know, yeah. And they start telling you stories about things, and you realize they're reading like Carlos Hathcock's book or something. Like, okay, yeah, I read too. But I get a lot of guys, yeah, I was a sniper, and I did this, and I did that. And I'm like, really? You know, oh, that's funny. That's why I tell people, I went to the sniper school, but I wasn't a sniper. I was a marksman for the MPs, designated marksman. And that's what we should all be. We should be a militia of marksmen. And if we incorporate these good old boy hunting skills and just sharpen them a little bit with the military finite training that they put on the snipers, I think we can come to a good balance. You know, before the break, I was talking about, you know, I get this question all the time. How do you go to the bathroom in that thing? And I go, I do. And they go, what? How do you go to the bathroom in that thing? I go to the bathroom in it.
Depends.
And Stacy says, depends. We've stocked up on adult undergarments. Is that what they're called? Adult diapers? We got tons of them. People laugh at us, but we're like, how do you know you're not going to need them? If you move an inch, you could, you know, give yourself up to the enemy. But the other thing is, if you picked your position good, and we're going to talk about that a little bit for the rest of the hour, the rest of this half hour, if you picked your position good enough, you can pre-plan for it. You can dig a trench under your body that you can urinate into, and it will lead it off into a bush. You can conceal it, cover it. It'll go in, because animals will detect it. We talked a little bit about that. Some people have used motor oil to cover up the odors of their excrement and their urination. There are different things you can do. If you pick your hide good enough, you can retreat behind it and, you know, have a nice little squat, but you still got to get rid of that waste product. Burying it very deep is good. Covering it with coffee or cayenne pepper is a good thing to do to throw the animals off, because they're trained specifically. I talked a little bit about dogs. Most military dogs are trained specifically to look for human scent. However, just because a dog's not trained doesn't mean it can't give up your location. A happy-go-lucky puppy running around the hillside may just want to come and play with you because it loves humans. So dogs are a sniper's worst enemy. Other snipers, too, but, you know, hunter-killer teams. But as far as the weapons that the other side uses, a dog is a bad thing. dogs will just come up on you. I love it when I've been in positions, either in training or when I was in the Army doing stuff. Yeah, birds land on you and crap on you. And people would talk about how much they hated that. I'm like, no, that's a good sign. That means you're doing your job right. If a bird lands on your back, takes a dump. If an animal walks up and urinates, I've had deer walk across my back, realize what they're doing, freak out, and take off. In a less dangerous scenario, I've been in paintball, outlaw paintball games where, you know, you're just out in the woods hunting each other. I've had people sit on me. People step on me. You know, those of you that play paintball know about the barrel tag. You know, the 8-foot rule, 10-foot rule. You don't want to get shot. I've taken a lot of people out of paintball just by sticking my barrel in their butt and saying, you're standing on my groin. That's when you know your ghillie suit or your fighting position is working. I can't tell you the perfect way to find a position to shoot from. You don't want to be on the top of a hill. You don't want to be in the bottom of a valley. But there are no rules. The first rule of being a designated marksman or sniper, if you will, is that there are no rules. There are guidelines. So they told me in the school. There's no cardinal rule, but other than not being seen. So you don't want to be on the top of a hill, skyline yourself. You want to be on the slope, behind the hill, through the hill, all those kind of things. You always want to have an escape route. It's suicide to put yourself in a cave and go, they'll never get me here. At the very least, they'll smoke you out or cave it in on you, and they'll find your corpse 50 years later when they're doing a History Channel show on the Revolution. Why? Why be like the Japanese on Iwo Jima? They're still finding bodies. Always have multiple escape routes. Always be willing to, you know, drop your gear and run. We're not the military. I doubt we're going to have a Mike force come in and rescue us. So you're going to have to cover a lot of land real fast. So the best thing is just not to be seen. I guess if I have to say there's one rule, don't be seen. So all this hunting stuff, if you can stock up on a deer and take it with a bow, you can take out a man with a rifle 300 yards or more away. You know, you don't want them to see. You want to use the wind to your advantage. You know, you don't want to have the wind blowing from you into their face of your dirty body. Humans will smell it. We've talked about that here before. What happened, Lou? The computer crash? That's really weird. Not our computers, the other one. 93.3 FM just crashed, so Lou's going to bring it up. What did we lose?
Nothing.
Okay, good. Lou's rebooting that over there, getting the radio station going. I feel like we're pioneers in TV and radio when it first started. I love it. It keeps Lou busy. Good homeschooling for him. So be aware of your body odors. One of the things I always do is I always washed in Dove liquid detergent my clothes and things. But you can go and get, you can get all these things that kill scent, kill UV. It's not good to wash a ghillie suit in a washing machine. It ties it in knots. You know, like when I've told you, animals have crapped on me when I'm in my ghillie suit. Not this one, but the previous one to it, which I sold to somebody. I sold to a SWAT guy, actually, wanted it for, he said for hunting. Who knows? He was like-minded. I take it out in the yard. I scrub soap on it, wet it down with a garden hose, and do it by hand. You know, it's like you're the lady's delicates. You have to use Woolite, but I wouldn't use Woolite. You want to use stuff that doesn't have scent to it. And you can buy that, you know, a decent hunting store. Walmart sells it during hunting season, the unscented stuff. Because UV will give you away. One of the cool things, if you're using, like, night vision, you're using thermal stuff, if you have access to that, look at your ghillie suit through that and see what shows up. See what shows up. They've got ghillie suits out there that supposedly deflect the body heat. I don't have any access to that. I don't know how they work. I've seen them in books. It seems to me that it would be very expensive, but I think it's like wearing a giant corrugated cardboard suit made out of some material that dissipates heat rapidly. Okay, if you have access to that, that's cool. Some people like taking just the camouflage netting, you know, that we have. They cut it into the shape of a man, and they sew it on the suit. Great way to start. I have nothing against that. There's nothing wrong with a shortcut that works. What doesn't work is... In my opinion, just, you know, going down to Walmart and for $50, you buy one of those leafy suits. They're nice and lightweight. They feel great. But when you're out there, they just don't work. It still looks like a man to me. They got great ads. They adjust the camera properly. They set the lighting, the f-stop, all that stuff to make it blend in. But they just don't work. You need stuff hanging off of it. Now, if you figure out a way, because they're made with really lightweight netting, great for keeping insects off you. If you can find a way to adhere more stuff to it, let me know about it, because maybe that's a good way to go. Start with those leafy cut, you know, suits that, you know, protrude 1 or 2 inches would be good to do it. Don't skimp on your headgear. Don't skimp on your facial camouflage. There's nothing funnier than a guy who's got this big ghillie suit on and he hasn't camoed his face or covered it, and he flips up his face veil and just boom, you see this patch of you know, white out there. And if you're a black fella or a brown fella, it still shows up. Your eye is drawn to it. And trained observers will look for the two eyes, the nose, and the mouth shape, and the gloss of the skin. So even if you've got a face mask, apply the face paint, the camouflage face paint. If you don't have face paint, charcoal, dirt, whatever it takes, rub it in your face. Charcoal's good, you know, and stuff like that. Anything that's breathable, it's not going to make you sweat and affect your vision. One of the problems I have is I sweat all the time. I'm sitting here talking to you right now, and my glasses are fogging up, and these are shooting glasses, goggles, things like that. They make these goggles that have a screen that go over them that are camouflage. I can't wear them. When I shoot, I have to take my goggle, my glasses off, because mine are mostly for up close. What are you talking? Oh, they're not good. It will tear apart as you go through the brush. I think you're talking about those Mossy Oak store-bought ones. I just, everything that you can buy, I'm not a fan of, other than the sniper tog where you start. I haven't touched one, but the pictures look good, and I get good reports on them. I don't like buying them. I bought the ones that are pre-made for majors. I bought one for $79, went down to the border. The jacket, the pants, and the headgear were made of plastic, like a thin vinyl, and I sweat, and it was terrible, and it sounded like a crinkly, you know, like somebody was just cellophane going down the trail. I actually threw it over the fence and gave it to the enemy as I didn't want it anymore. It was terrible. And it everything I walked by, it hooked on and it dragged it with it. That's another thing you got to realize. When you're crawling along the ground, everything you touch, if it's tall, is going to wiggle up high and be an indicator where you're at. So you can't touch anything. That's why you got to move really slow. Speed is not something that you want to have as a mindset. If you have to get to some location fast, it's not a job for a designated marksman. You should tell your commanders, well, that's not something I can do. You're giving me 3 hours to get up on that hill in plain sight of the enemy? No, that's something that's going to take me 3 days to get in there. And even then, I can't guarantee that I'll be able to get a good vision, good eyes-on contact where I can radio back. Sorry, can't do it. You have to be willing to say no. You're a very valuable asset if you have this skill set, and hopefully your commanders will know. But you have to educate them. Right now, I've talked to modern snipers on the internet that are deployed over there, people that I know. And they held a class in Iraq before the big, you know, they tapped off the 100,000 people. And they said, all company-level commanders, anyone that's combat arms, anybody that wants to, we're going to start doing these open houses and show you what snipers are capable of and give you training so that you'll know how better to deploy them, you know, in your area of operations. They put this out throughout the entire theater of the warfare. And they had like one every month for like 3 or 4 months. Only one commander showed up, and he was like a second, not even a commander, one officer, I used the wrong term. Second lieutenant showed up. And that's because he wanted to be a sniper. They don't care about that kind of stuff in the military anymore. It goes in ebbs and flows. You know, there was a time when I was in, we were considered bad. That's why the Army, the MPs wouldn't let me wear a sniper patch. They wouldn't let me use the term. I had to say designated marksman. Very, very strange attitude the military has. That's why I'm glad I'm in the militia, not that. The commander of the militia I'm in knows that kind of stuff. And he's going to say, can you do this? Can you do that to the guys that are snipers? I'm not even going to have that role. But if I were in shape and if I were still a weapon like that, I would make darn sure that I didn't get wasted, that I didn't get misused. And you have to be a real advocate for your skill set in that. You know, and if that means you have to show off a little bit and be a little arrogant, yeah, go ahead. There's nothing wrong with that. But don't let them misuse you. The other thing you got to talk about is being able to use communications. You have to know how to use every kind of radio possible because you don't know where you're going to be. Murphy's Law of Communications is what you're bringing won't get out. So you'll bring two or three. So you have to – these guys that are snipers have to have such a broad set of skills. I talked about call for fire. Well, that may not be an issue with the militia, but reporting back what you're seeing is, and if you move to a secondary point and you get there and there's no radio – Your HF radio is not going to work, then you got to go, okay, well, let's get out the low band. Let's get out this. Let's set up an antenna. You have to have a knowledge of how to do field expedient antennas and camouflage them. Putting an antenna in a tree, anybody can do it, but doing it without anybody seeing you do it and having it up there for an extended period of time without anybody knowing it's there, very important skill to have if you're going to be doing this type of thing. Now, let's crank it down a little bit. Let's pretend you're just a shore watcher who shoots real good. That's the kind of mentality you should have as a shore watcher who may have to take a shot once in a while. One of the biggest skills is to be able to communicate what you see accurately and precisely. We went over Robert's Ranger's rules last week or last month. Be honest in everything you do and report exactly what you do and what you see. Don't embellish. It's not for someone who's prone to making themselves look better than they were, or prone to somebody who understates things. You have to have a mindset that I'm a human camera. You know, if there's 30, you see 30 people, don't speculate, well, if there's 30, there must be 200. They got 200 guys coming down the trail. The information you give back is critical. If you engage and take out only one enemy and the rest run away, you don't say, well, I may have got four or five. It's not about feathering your nest and embellishing your record and, you know, so that people will buy you drinks when you get back inside the wire. Honesty is critical. You don't want a dishonest guy out there doing this kind of work, for those of you that have to select people. You need somebody who has a skill as an artist. If you don't have the technology, if we run out of electricity, we run out of batteries, it goes back to the old school days of writing down on a range card everything you see, writing reports. Has to be someone of intelligence. What good is it if I can send somebody out there who can shoot well, who I can't trust, to give me an adequate report, an accurate report, not adequate, accurate report, and present me with notes and a knowledge of what the enemy's doing. If I get, this is the worst thing that can happen. Yeah, I was up on the hill. A bunch of these, like, tanks came down, and there were some trucks, and there were some guys, and I just hauled butt out of there. You know, courage aside and staying there and seeing the whole thing, they got to know what they're seeing. You have to give an accurate salute report. Or even if the guy's not military, he's got to be able to say, yeah, it was like big deuce-and-a-half diesel trucks. There were four of them. Each one had 12 soldiers in the back. I counted heads as they went by. There were large armored car vehicles. They looked to be Russian. You got to study what the enemy's using. When there's downtime, they don't spend their time just sitting around fiddling their thumbs. They've got flashcards. They're reading books that are available. They're looking at everything the enemy possibly could have so they can identify it. Target identification is critical, especially at long distances and in fainting light. Fainting light. It's funny. We did a thing up here where just after the sun went down, we're looking at people, and we had to figure out who in the group it was. And our instructor's like, okay, he's 200 yards out. Moon's not up yet. He's walking with a gun. Do you take the shot? And there were people in our group that said yes. And one of them turned out to be our pastor. So you just shot our pastor. Well, he's walking. He's got a gun. I don't know who he is. It's a good way of thinning people out, unless they're trainable. If they continue to argue with you and go, hey, man, that was unfair. That's not cool. They don't have the right kind of mindset, and you don't want to put them in that position where they're going to be on a hill, and they may shoot their relief coming up. I heard a terrible story about something in Arizona, and I won't go into the accuracy of it, but somebody from California went over there, joined, and just about murdered the head of some militia over there because he was put out on a gate or on a sentry position by himself, improper equipment, no challenging call, and up the road comes a cohort with his headlights on, and the guy takes a shot at him. Actually happened. And I could tell a couple other dozen stories like it. Look at Stonewall Jackson. Got shot by his own guys. The people that you're going to select for this type of role have to know what they're doing. Just because they have all the equipment, they've been to front sight and they did it, you need to sit down and interview these people and make sure they have the proper mindset. They may be suitable for defending the garrison over a wall when it's very clear who the enemy is and very narrow responsibility. But you're going to need people in these positions, in these outward observation posts, in these outlying positions that gather intel for you and may take the critical shots. They have to be standalone, not a maverick attitude, but kind of a mountain man attitude. But they have to have integrity. They have to have a knowledge base. They have to be very intelligent. Just because somebody talks with a funny drawl and is living in the mountains doesn't mean he's stupid. You need somebody with intelligence. I remember my mom told me when I was a kid, stupid all depends on where you're standing. You put me in the middle of New York City, other than having basic self-defense skills, I wouldn't be able to find a place to eat. I probably wouldn't even speak their freaking language. Yeah, see, I tried a little bit there, tried to use one of their words. Stupid all depends on where you're standing. So you need people that are willing to adapt and overcome, and then when, everything goes out the window, they're still going to find a way to do their mission. They're not going to run to the hills and tell you some sob story about how their equipment broke. The radio broke, so I walked back in. And meanwhile, people are sneaking in through your back door. very, very important stuff. And I try to share it with you guys on a daily basis. I try to make it entertaining. I try to make sure that you guys get the meat and potatoes without the fluff. I mean, we have fun. We make sound effects and stuff, and I try to tell stupid little jokes. But the reality of it is this is life and death stuff, people. The effort that you're putting into it now will make all the difference later. You know, and getting off the subject because we only got about 4 minutes left here. Pastor came over today, sat down in our living room. We've got our food, we got gear, we got new stuff. We were ordering stuff for people. You know, we got things going on, and he's just like, oh, well, you seem to be taking care of stuff. And what he came in for is he had heard that Steve Quayle is telling everybody that, you know, there's going to be a huge economic crisis here in the next few days and that they're going to seize all the money in the banks. They're going to, you know, lock them down. And I said, yeah, it's Steve Quayle. I like some of his stuff. I'm not crazy about it. Just like I said yesterday about Cooper, I'm not crazy about all the UFO and the giants and the lizard people and Planet X. It may be true, but it's not going to really affect me right now. But just be about the business. And he said, well, several months ago, Mark Kornke had said on one of his shows that you have to have something you can give to the refugees when you turn them away. So we sat down and had a real quick meeting, and we're going to spend about $200 on these little survival things that we can just hand to people when they come up and say, nope, you can't come in, but here you go. It's about being diligent, the signs of the times. Now, I don't put any faith in the stuff Steve Quayle says. He's been right about a few things. You know, that's great. I don't listen to him, but people send me his newsletter stuff or quips and links, and I listen to him, and yeah, fine. We've got to be generalists right now. We've got to be watching everything. We don't know which way this is going to come from. We've got to be ready for anything. And we learn from each other. Just like the pastor said, hey, the intelligence report said you better be able to hand people stuff. So he's like, here's what we'll do. We'll get an energy bar. I forgot what he called. What did he call those bars?
Millennium
bars. Some fish hooks, some matches, some kindling. You know, we'll put it all in these survival tubes. I've been giving away these survival tubes, and I wrap them in parachute cord that we got from Minuteman. He brought up a whole, like, trunk load of literally just cut off the parachute, you know, like 18-foot strands. And, you know, put all that in there, maybe. And we're going to put a track in there. What was the name of the track we decided?
It was 3L.
Yeah, but what was the one, the first one that went on? It was something about survival or something. Anyway, something, they're from like Y2K that Chick Track put out.
Holy Joe.
Holy Joe, yeah, the Holy Joe track. We're going to put those in there. And, you know, maybe directions to, you know, we'll draw a little hand, make maps, print them up, you know, where they can find water and stuff. And say, you know, move on. You can't stay here, but, you know, we still love you. That kind of stuff. And we've got a plan for all of this. Personally, I don't care when the electricity goes off and the bank sees, because the minute we get money, we convert it to resources, don't we, honey? She's just watching her over there type away. Are you on the National Rifle Association website? You know I don't like them, right? Are you yelling at them? Oh, you're yelling at them? You look mad. You send it, you're whipping off a little comment to the NRA? Yeah. Tell them I want my magazines. I'm a lifetime member. I tried to cancel it, and they wouldn't let me cancel.
Tell them they need to watch California.
Yeah, they're not doing us any good. They don't get a penny of my money. I became a lifetime member when I was a teenager on a shooting team, and I'm supposed to get these magazines every month, and they won't send them to me. And I said, well, fine, cancel my membership. And they go, oh, well, you have to know your original number. And I go, I don't remember all that. I got Alzheimer's. I had a stroke. I had a heart attack. I don't even have my jacket anymore. Somebody stole my leather jacket with my NRA patch on it when they broke into my car one day. And about six magazines for my 45. Still one of the worst days of my life. But I deserved it. I was doing something I wasn't supposed to with somebody I shouldn't have been with in a part of town I shouldn't have been there. And God kicked me in the head then, just like he does now when I do stupid stuff. Well, folks, that's the end of the show. Lou's not paying attention. He's staring over at somebody. What are you looking at, Lou?
The radio station.
Is it working?
Yeah.
Okay, good. This is the Dutch Jones radio program. If you like what you hear, please make a donation. Minuteman, we need you to email us your address. We destroy it every month. When we go through our paperwork, we get rid of it. We don't have your address. We have a care package we need to send to you, and we don't have your address. So, Minuteman, go ahead and send that to any one of the emails, and Monday we will send out your care package. Other than that, if you like what you hear, make a donation. If you don't like what you hear, send comments. I listen to constructive comments. And just remember, I'm not doing this because I'm trying to impress anybody. I already got a beautiful wife, crazy son, and a place to live. I'm doing it because I care about what you guys go through, my brothers and sisters out there. I want you guys to survive, so when we build a good nation, we got good people to build it with. So if I've come across as arrogant or condescending, it's not meant that way. It's the urgency of the time, folks. Remember, the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, but victory belongs to the Lord, and He loves you enough to let you take part in it. Okay, Minuteman, I can see that. We'll get it off that. We'll be back Monday morning, and again, if you didn't hear the first hour and 20 minutes, go to the archives. Go to the archives on DutchJones.info, DutchJones.info. And while you're there, scroll down and make a donation of $5. We'll send you a handful of bumper stickers. Talk to you later. God bless you all as you go out there and fight this, the second battle, the second war of federal aggression.
Tells you.